This is the Delivery Space podcast. Whether you're interested in software delivery, business change, or transformation, we have some great content lined up for you. We launch into different areas of project delivery and bring you insights and experiences that you won't get from a book. I'm joined this morning by Francis Lallemand, who's a good friend and someone I respect in the field. Hello, Francis. How are you?
Hello, Nisha. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And you are bringing yourself closer to us from Singapore. Would you like to tell our listeners where you're dialing in from today?
Yes, I live in Singapore, but today I'm dialing in from Ostend on the beach, on the Belgian beach. And I can actually see on the horizon a whole line of ships waiting to enter the Thames estuary.
Yeah. Nice.
They're just barely visible, but they're there.
Yeah. Colder climate than Singapore.
Extremely cold, yeah.
Francis is a human-centric thinker of processes and systems and organizations. He's a designer for social impact in communities, in the education field, with NGOs and with corporate L&D professionals in a variety of organizations and sectors with a focus on tech and telco. The things that keep Francis going are people and play and art and nature. For many years, Francis has been in training to be a husband and a father. He is a Scrum and Agile practitioner, teacher and coach. He's developed a new take on designing the conditions for emergence of a creative space for facilitation of co-creation and learning. He's called this resourceful exformation. And I would encourage any of you listening to this that are passionate about facilitation and want to freshen your techniques up to invest in it. Here is my well-thumbed copy of the book. It's taught me so much. And I've had Francis as a guide to take me through some of the practices in there. I consider myself fortunate. A little bit more about Francis. His secret hope is that in playfulness and reflection will turn out to be among the most coveted keys to excellence. Although it is getting at the look of something and letting go, that is almost the better way of doing things, to investigate things in a deeper way. Play and reflection are what Francis is exceptionally good at, while letting go is a much harder task, he acknowledges, but he's trying to give us the keys to do that to get the best out of our teams. Francis has gone places too. So as he's just said to you, he hails from the clay on the coastal flatlands near the Franco-Belgian border, with the white cliffs of Dover calling on the horizon. When he was old enough to answer that call and set sail, the voyage brought him further than he could have imagined. For near to 20 years, he lived in India and Sri Lanka, trying to be a Buddhist monk and aspiring to be a Sanskrit teacher and writing the first few sentences of a good 100 imaginary books. Francis now lives in Singapore, where he loves the tropical weather, the greenery of its urban space, the diversity of its people, the closeness to large stretches of real jungle, and the happenstance of being in the very heart of Southeast Asia. I love that, Francis. That sounds like the introduction of a really good story.
Yeah, when I listen to you, it amazes me that this is about me. I must be very old.
It's not showing, for sure. We want to talk about the spirit of kata today, yeah, and the teachings of kata today. Yeah. To set the scene for our audience, can you give a brief explanation of kata, Francis?
I can do three different things. I can tell you what it means. It's just a Japanese word. You know, I can just tell you what it means. And I can also tell you how it is commonly understood.
Yes, please.
I could also tell you how I understand it, which is not necessarily the same thing. First of all, the word, you know, it just means a routine, which is different from a habit. A habit is something that we just, mostly behavior actually, that has got into our system. You know, the word system is important because it's something systemic. You know, it's how we respond to circumstances and our environment. You know, that's a habit. You know, but a routine is different from that. A routine is a habit, but mindful. Because a habit, you can have a habit. Mostly, when we have a habit, we lost the mindful part of it. You know, we don't have a habit mindfully. Yeah. And when we have a habit mindfully, it becomes a routine. And that's actually the meaning of Tata. Yeah. So most people will understand this word in relationship with how they go through life, you know. The word is very common in an environment of martial arts, where they teach you that you need certain routines, yeah, so ingrained into your system, yeah, that they happen without thinking. You don't need to think, yeah. It's martial arts after all. So if someone sits in a tree and jumps on you, you do not have the time to think. There's a certain movement of the body in the space, yeah, that happens without thinking, and yet happens mindfully.
That's quite powerful, Francis, because the way I'm making this distinction is every day I have a routine to go downstairs and water my plants. That's my routine. But on the other hand, a habit for me is I brush my teeth. Doesn't matter how late I come home from a night out, for example, I will always make sure I brush my teeth. That's like an ingrained habit. Don't even have to think about it. Never ever dive straight into bed. I will always brush my teeth.
Yeah.
But the routine is also what gives a lot of joy to me.
Now imagine that you could achieve. Imagine that you would have like your mind set. That you have when you go down and water the plants while you brush your teeth. Also imagine that the quality of what you do when you brush your teeth would be in the watering the plants. Yeah. Difficult mind exercise. Let us just go slightly deeper into this, you know. Okay. You go down, you water the plants. Yeah.
Right.
You are aware that you're doing this. Yeah. So you said it's a habit. You said it.
The plants is a routine.
The plants is...
Teeth is a habit.
The teeth is a habit. Okay. The plant is the routine. Why is the plant the routine? You still have to think of it?
I think of it in the way that it is, it's something that gives me joy. And also, I don't want to see dead plants around the house. So I will make sure, you know, after I've done my morning stuff, my morning routine, I'll go down. And before, you know, while the kettle's boiling, it's a routine to look after the plants.
The idea of a tata is that whatever action it is, either the giving water to the plants or the brushing of your teeth, or in martial arts, you know, I don't know, the movement that makes you ready to...
Just happens.
Yeah, all these things, you can train your mind and your body. Yeah. It's always mind/body. Yeah.
Right.
I use the word body-mind, but you can train your system, you know, to do these, to step into these things without thinking and yet doing them thoughtfully.
Okay.
It's the act of being in the moment of what you do. It's like breathing. Have you ever done meditation, Alicia?
Yes, yes.
Well, then you'll know this, you know. We breathe, you know. Nobody has to tell me, Francis, breathe or you die. Yeah, you have to take oxygen. Francis, oxygen. There's no need for it. We just breathe.
Right.
Yeah, we just breathe. But then in meditation, you are asked to breathe mindfully. Yeah, and then you discover that when you sort of start mastering the art of breathing mindfully, this is after 40 or 50 years of meditation that you maybe will reach this stage. I don't know. We reach a certain stage where we can breathe mindfully all the time. And this does not mean that you have to cognitively tell yourself to breathe, but you are just aware without feeling any force being acted upon you. It comes completely from within. So this is actually what a kata is, you know. It comes from within. And since it's from within, like breathing, there is no life without it. True kata is something that is inherent to who you are. But when you're not, you can't manage to create like a deep awareness of it, then your so-called kata is actually just a dependency.
You're drawing that distinction now.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to see it.
We do not want dependencies, do we?
Oh, absolutely not.
We want to free ourselves of dependencies. Also, let's translate this into an organization, you know, like a, because now we have spoken of my body mind, you know. Now let's see an organization or a team as a body mind. Yeah. It's actually a team has a shape and it has a culture, so it's a body mind. Yeah. Anything that has shape and value, something mental. Yeah. So anything that has an addition of a physical and a mental aspect. Yeah. It can be a body mind. So a team. In a team, suppose that you would want to have as a cultural element the fact that you always reach out to one another and you always are concerned with one another. Now you can say we have a habit of asking each other in the morning, "Hello, Nisha, how are you? Are you fine today?" That would be nice, you know. It would be really nice. But it's only nice if it's a true question. If I really want to know how you are today. So it's not because my team lead or whatever, or my scrum master or puts up in the dojo, as from today, we are going to
check in,
yeah, okay, daily check-in. Yeah, we're going to do that, yeah. And then in the daily stand-up, we start with the check-in moment. The scrum master tells you this and you just do it. And then typically, you know what I mean, Nisha. You see this row of developers, you know, in front of you. And then,
oh, yes.
There is this to do, you know. Hello, how are you?
It becomes a boring thing because it's a forced routine.
Actually, yeah, I don't really want to know, you know, how you are. It's just leave me alone, you know. Yeah, but we have this culture, you know. Yeah. That's what you get, you know. So a kata means, or the practice of kata, means that you can get beyond this. And you can get this deeply into the system as something unspoken. It's something contextual. It's in the context of the body mind of the team. And it is there, you know. And outsiders would sort of feel the power of this team, this extraordinary team cohesion that exists there. Yeah. You have to take care that the team, you don't make them aware, but you help them staying aware of mindfully practicing this carefulness for each other. Yeah.
So Francis, what's my starting point? If I have a team, I'm working with a team, or our listeners are working with teams, what is their starting point to start building that mindful carefulness for each other? Because some people can interpret it, I guess, as team chemistry. Oh, that team's got some great chemistry. They get on with each other. They make sure they're always on the same page. Even if they have disagreements, there is a comfortable atmosphere to have disagreements. What's my starting point to create that careful mindfulness?
It's not an easy question. It's not an easy question. The starting point is the people you have. The starting point is the people. Yeah. It's not your starting point. It's their starting point. It's a common starting point. You know, so many scrum masters and change agents and they ask me, what do I have to do? Well, you don't have to do. You have to read into what you have. You have to read into your system. You have to literally to read into the as-is of your system. Yeah. And your system is basically, it's the people you have. And it's more than that. It's also how they relate to their to the physical space in which they work. And like now, we all went online for so much of the time. It's how people relate to being online, you know. There are all different kind of dynamics all of a sudden, you know. This is your material. You can try to apply certain recipes and prescriptions, but it won't work that very well, you know. I think it starts with heightening the awareness of the body mind of a community or a team. You know? Just like it was in an individual, you know. And a cooperative community mindfulness.
Good.
that you need to let emerge. You cannot generate it, you cannot create it, yeah. but you let it emerge. Yeah. I think I like the role title of being like a servant leader, because that is the exact position from where you can get there. Mm. Yeah. If you are in service of the people that you work with, it's very difficult to put that down in steps, you know. It has been done.
I'm trying to think about this in the context of teams, and what I'm reflecting continuously back on is the set of resourceful information exercises that you did with us as a team, as a cohort of people that you took through during lockdown. And I'm reflecting on that. At that time, we were, if you like, your team of people who you wanted to take through that process. From what I remember, you didn't follow a set series of steps. You let the relationships between us emerge so that we could produce the best that we thought at that time. And I guess that comes from being able to step back and encouraging the team to have that dialogue between each other, encouraging them to solve problems, encouraging them to, like you said, look at their environment. Because that's what Xformation that you've taught us about is, really look at all the things that you've got at your disposal in your environment and see what emerges, rather than putting things in and being prescriptive.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And this is something you did in the introduction. You said you disclosed something of my monastic master, which doesn't represent too much. But this is something that I learned there. Your mentor would tell you, you have to let go of your thoughts.
Yeah. Yes.
And then I was a young guy, you know, just off university. I was academically, I knew a lot about Buddhism, I thought. but in practice, no, zilch, nothing, you know. So then this monk tells me, you have to let go of your thoughts. And I said, but how? And he looks very angry at me. He said, or go. And then the next day he asked me, and did you let go of your thoughts? I said, no, I don't know how. Yeah. And each time I kept asking him how, he would grumble. And this is the exformative way that you're referring to, you know, because I had to find out how myself. Yeah. Because his how is not necessarily my how. There are different hows, you know. And this is also a mistake, you know, that we make in many of our agile practices, and we always think that what we do is copy pastable, because we have assembled a series of recipes and we have assembled a series of tools to get there. Yeah, but these things are not copy pastable. These things have to be reinvented each time. And even in a team, when some individual leaves a team, the team is completely different. And then one individual enters the team, you know, to take the previous one's place, you know, you have a completely different thing. You have to start again. Everybody has to start, because the system has changed. We all have our mouths full of how responsive we are to change and how good we are at accepting and embracing change. Yeah. But the slightest little change in our practice is not tolerated. And it has been done. I'm saying all this out there, there's plenty of good books on kata, how to apply kata. It comes from lean. Yeah. In lean practitioners, they try to apply lean in European and American organizations, and they want to know, why doesn't it work? You know, and in Japan it works so well, and here it just doesn't work. Yeah. But they were just copying the visible aspects of what they saw at Toyota and Honda, that kind of companies in Japan. You know, they were just seeing the visible part of it and applying it elsewhere. They were copy-pasting it, until it was discovered that in Japan, there is a non-visible part of Lean. And that non-visible part is the underlying katas that exists and live in these teams. And then authors have started looking for a way to document the undocumentable.
Automatically, Francis, that's the bottom bit of the iceberg, don't we? That's what you can see about a person above the water level, but underneath you have the socioeconomical impact of that person, the family, the upbringing, lots and lots of factors that play into how they could practice kata or something similar within their workplace. And I don't see how this has got me sparking off lots and lots of thoughts around scaled environments, like people within organizations want to scale their environments because they want to deliver at pace. They want not just one scrum team doing it, but they want to discover a formula which they can multiply the great operation that one scrum team is. They're working brilliantly. They've got that great chemistry. They've got that cohesion. They understand each other. Now let's replicate. But you replicating on a basis of practices that have been documented, but you're not replicating based on the messy work that has to be done with people. Like one of my mentors calls it messy work. You then, like you say, have to be prepared to let the people that are in those scrum teams dictate how they work together and to find their own rhythm.
I love the concept of messy work. I call it checking out facts like crazy. We need to check out facts like crazy, you know, not just the visible part of it. And I do not want to bring down the very worthy and very nice and highly esteemed work of those who have set to documenting the undocumentable. You know?
Yeah.
Like in the context of kata, there's Mike Rother. He wrote these classic books about the kata that he felt was there at Toyota. If you read his introduction, you will read the same things that I just said, you know. It's invisible. It was elusive to us because we didn't see it. Nobody told us it was there, you know. In these Japanese companies, it's just understood that this is the culture. Yeah, it's understood, and we just couldn't grasp it. You know? And then he goes on and he grasps it. Yeah, and he gives it a double name. He says there's at these companies there is a kata of improvement. And there is a kata of permanent coaching. And he documents these katas and he works out like diagrams and plans and step-by-step things and all very nice and well. But if you do that, it's no longer a kata. It becomes like a scrum master telling you to sit, that you don't have to think of because it comes naturally, but yet you do it mindfully.
Are there any bodies of knowledge? Because I know that from what you say, this is not something that you can grasp just by reading a book. This is something that other humans can bring to life for us. Are there any leads or any threads of information that you can leave behind for our listeners today?
It starts with this checking out things like crazy thing, you know. It's actually a boundless, complete, immersive, embodied, non-stoppable curiosity. That's what it is, you know. Get out that house where you are now when you watch this podcast and go out and just check out everything you see and be limitlessly curious for that little piece of grass that grows behind two flagstones on the pavement, you know. Just be limitlessly curious for every physical and mental thing that comes to you. Everything physical has a mental aspect and everything mental has a physical aspect. So that's what you can hold on to, you know.
I love that. I cannot wait for Sharon to watch and listen back to this episode. Sharon and I always talk about limitless curiosity and how that gets us through some of the challenges that we face, not just in our professional lives with teams, but also within our private lives as well, on simple everyday to day, you know, everyday things. So thank you so much, Francis, for coming and joining me today and sparking off an amazing conversation, which has helped me reflect deeper in my practice and areas where I can improve as well. So that's been It's been of such value to me, and I'm sure it's going to be of value to our listeners as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Nisha.